Today is August 15th, year 2000. This is an interview with Mary Taylor. The interviewer is Betsy Brinson, and we are conducting the interview in the residence of Ms. Taylor in Paducah, Kentucky. Ms. Taylor, I need to get a voice level, so would you say your full name for me, please?
My name is Mary E. Taylor.
And what does the E stand for?
Etta.
Ella?
Etta. E-T-T-A.
Etta. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Well, thank you, Ms. Taylor, for agreeing to talk with me today. When I talked with Mr. J.W. Cleary, who's the president of the NAACP, he gave me names of people who had been active in the community in the NAACP chapter, and your name was one of them. And what I'd like to do today is I'm going to ask you some questions about you personally, and then maybe we can talk a little bit about the role of the NAACP in Paducah and race relations in Paducah as you see them. Does that sound okay?
Yes.
Okay. Why don't we begin, please, by telling me where and when you were born?
I was born in Massac County, Illinois.
And what year was that?
1914.
And can you spell the name of that county for me, please?
M-A-S-S-A-C.
Massac County.
Massac.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. You okay?
Yeah, good.
Okay, so that makes you 86 years old?
86 years old, March the 20th of 2000.
Okay. Tell me a little bit, please, about your growing up. Who was in your family? And do you know anything about your ancestors?
It was a large family of us, and I am the oldest of nine children. Mm-hmm. And we were reared by our mother and father. Mm-hmm. My father passed away after I was grown. And my mother passed away in 1959. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And of course, and it was eight other children.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And how did your family make their living?
My father, he worked as a tie carer.
Now tell me
what that is.
No, a tie
carrier. He would load them on barges.
A tire. Oh, okay.
Ties. You know, the railroad.
Okay.
Tires, you know, with you. That.
And he would load those on boats?
On boats, okay. Barges, and they went all over at that time, you know.
Okay. Did your mother work outside of the home?
Not until after he passed away, then she began to work because quite a few of the smaller children at that time.
What kind of work could she find to do in Illinois?
Just plain housework.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Did, what do you know about any of your ancestors?
Oh, I knew my grandmother from my daddy's side. Mm-hmm. My mother's mother had passed away before I got old enough to remember them. But my grandfather and grandmother from my father's side, mm-hmm. and about six or seven aunts and uncles, I knew that side of the family real well. Mm-hmm. But my mother's people...
Let me stop you. Did they live in Illinois?
No, they lived in Tennessee.
Okay.
A little place called Saltillo, Tennessee, on the other side of Lexington. Mm-hmm. Tennessee.
Okay.
That's, we had visited them, you know, as we grew along.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we knew my father's people real well.
Mm-hmm. And what do you know about your mother's people?
As I said, I don't remember my grandparents, mm-hmm. but she did have two brothers that I, which was my uncles, mm-hmm. I did know. And they, one was worked in the coal mine. The other one, I think he worked for the city because he lived in Evansville, Indiana, mm-hmm. at the time, while we was growing up, you know. And
the one who lived in the coal mine, where did he do that?
Up in Kentucky, around
the
Eastern
Kentucky. Okay. Because you had some coal mines out here in Western Kentucky at one time too, didn't you?
I think so. Yeah. It seems like.
I think I've read that somewhere. Do you have you ever heard any family stories about your family being slaves at some time?
Oh, yeah, sometimes. My grandmother had told us a few things, you know, mm-hmm. along. Because she was, I believe she said she was born about a year or 2 years before the proclamation. Mm-hmm. But anyway, she lived through that time, you know, mm-hmm. area of time. And yeah, they have told us mm-hmm. quite a few things about.
And where did she grow up?
She grew up in the Tennessee area,
okay.
around in the,
okay. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit, please, about your education.
Well, as I said, it was a big family of us, and that been quite some time ago, as you know. Mm-hmm. After I just finished the eighth grade, mm-hmm. and because the others come along behind me, you know, mm-hmm. and our people, we weren't rich folks, we were poor farmers, people out in the farm area, you know. And I didn't get no more education than that until after I grew up, you know, after I got grown. I have tried to better myself in a lot of ways. You know.
Well, I want you to tell me about that, but first let me ask you, when you were going to school as a child, how big was your school and how far did you have to go? What was it named?
Oh. In Illinois, most of the schools go by a number.
Okay.
And we lived in the country, mm-hmm. out in the real country. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have very far to go to school, about a half a mile.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a one big room school.
Mm-hmm.
And eight classes in it.
Mm-hmm.
And usually one teacher,
mm-hmm.
and she would take care of the whole school.
Mm-hmm.
I remember times of going. She'd be there. Our teacher would be there first, of course, making the fires and taking care of the kids that would come in, most especially in the winter time. And, of course, the bigger children that was in school would help her to a certain extent, mm-hmm. you know.
How many children do you think were there at any one time?
Oh, I know it would be about 50 or 60.
Wow. That's a big
one. And it was eight classes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did you have any favorite subjects? No?
No, I don't think.
What did you like best about school?
Well, I liked the most of it. Our studies and all this. I used to think I liked geography. Now, I don't think they teach us this no more, see, these kind of things anymore. We had geography, our reading, arithmetic. It was arithmetic. And English, civics, that was the kind of studies we had at that time, see.
Do you know anything about your teachers? Like where they had gotten their training to be teachers, maybe?
Not really, but I think most of them from around Southern Illinois and places like that, you know. Okay.
When you finished the eighth grade, then what did you do?
Well, helped out at home.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And at what point did you come to Kentucky?
After I married, I met my husband, and I was about 19 years old when I came to Paducah. Mm-hmm.
How did you meet him?
He come in our neighborhood, and he had an uncle that lived over there, and he came over and stayed with him a while.
Mm-hmm. What was your husband's name?
James Taylor.
Okay. And so was he from Kentucky?
Paducah.
Paducah, okay. So you came to Kentucky as a young bride?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure did.
Did he have other family here?
Yes, he had a family. His mother and father and about five sisters and brothers.
Had you met any of them before you came?
No.
Okay. How was that?
Well, I didn't know nothing about them, what I mean, but when I first came to Paducah, I met his mother, and she was a wonderful person. And, we just fell in there just like another family.
That's good. Did you and your husband have any children?
No, we didn't.
Okay. And how did you and your husband make your living?
He was a contractor. He usually worked with on the roads, you know, on streets. Mm-hmm. Just contractor. He was a concrete finisher.
Okay. And where did he get? How did he learn to do that?
I guess probably just picked it up, but after he went to school here, see, Lincoln school, you know.
Okay.
And
was he able to finish school?
And no more than about the eighth grade, too, something like that.
And did you work outside the home, Miss Taylor?
Not too much then.
Okay.
But later on down in the years, I just started just doing housework, you know.
Okay. And you said earlier that you had tried to do some more education.
Yeah.
Well, tell me about that, please.
Well, they set up this adult education, and I took that up, I mean, and I'm sorry I never did get my GED, but I did earn it, but I never ever went and got my test, see, that we had to go to Murray to do that, But this was later in years. That was after he passed away. He was in the Army in World War II. And in 1952, he passed away. That's really when I went to work. My first big job was Lourdes Hospital, Riverside Hospital. And this school was going on, and I went to school.
And what were you doing at Riverside Hospital?
I started off as a maid, aide, in the housekeeping department.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Riverside Hospital isn't here today, is
no,
it?
No, Lourdes Hospital bought it.
Lourdes. Okay.
Lourdes.
Okay.
Lourdes.
Mm-hmm. And Lourdes is a Catholic.
Yeah,
hospital.
They was Catholic.
Was
see, the Riverside was belonged to the city. The general hospital in the city. But they came here in 1953, I guess it was, and they bought Riverside, and it was on the river front, down on 4th Street. But later years, they bought a place out here, and it's out on Cairo Road now. Not Cairo Road, Lone Oak Road.
What? Tell me the name of that road.
Lone Oak. OAK.
Okay.
Lone Oak Road.
Okay. When you went to work, though, was it still Riverside Hospital?
Yes, it was Riverside when I went. Well, first started working there, and that was in 1953.
Okay.
And I worked there 5 years under Riverside.
Okay.
And then they bought it.
And you continue to work.
Yes, thank you.
I want to ask you about Riverside Hospital. Did it treat black people from the community?
Yes, but it was segregated.
It was segregated, okay.
When I first went to work at the hospital, all black people was on the first floor and just part of it. You couldn't, they had about 4 rooms on the end for the black folks. And if it got to be more than that, they had some little rooms outside. Now that's as far as the black people could get. But after the Catholics bought the hospital, that's when it really broke down. Because they didn't agree with it at all, see. But we didn't move off of the first floor, though, until three, 4 years later. You couldn't go no further than the first floor. Yeah, it was segregated.
Okay. At what point in your life did you first realize that we had a segregated society?
Well, when we was growing up, I'll have to say this. We lived, as I said, out in the country. And the first little place, a little store where you could go and buy anything, that was the white neighborhood. Now back this way was the black neighborhood, and we had separate schools. But we could play together, went places together, the kids, And at that time, it didn't matter to me that way. But as older I got, I began to realize they don't want us there. we couldn't go there for different things, you know. Then I began to realize this isn't right. I knew we just couldn't do it. And being a child, I didn't know nothing else to do but accept it. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. When do you think you first heard about the NAACP? Did you know about them while you were growing up?
No, not too much. But somewhere along in my early teens, reading, of course, mm-hmm. and I seen about these things, but I didn't realize what it meant mm-hmm. at that time. Mm-hmm. I had married and lived here when I thoroughly knew what the NAACP was, mm-hmm. really.
And tell me if you remember how you first became involved with the NAACP here.
People began to talk about how the people was being treated in other places, you know. It never was too bad around here. But I mean, you know, it didn't have too much trouble, but most people knew where you belonged over here, they belonged over there. We just left it like that. But I began to realize this is, I tell you, Mr. Thurgood Marshall. That's the first person that I really paid some attention to as to what was going on and how it was separated, see. Because I remember him, one of his main cases he had was about the trains. Mm-hmm. Where to sit on a train. And then, oh, it was in court, I don't know how long. But anyway, he won that case, see, where you could get on the train. Mm-hmm. And sat in the same car with it. But up until then, I remember this passing through my mind. All the black people sat in the first coach right behind the engine. Mm-hmm. And all the others in the others, you know. Mm-hmm. And I said, wonder why they put us up front now. That's the way I felt. Mm-hmm. Well, they said, if anything happened, that's the first car to go. It don't make you feel good.
Right.
But that's the way it was, see. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I remember that faintly. Mm-hmm. As I said, I hadn't been raised right under that kind of treatment too much, you know. Because as I said, we all run around there together. But then in other places, I found out that you didn't do that.
Did you belong to a church growing up?
Oh, yes. I've been in church all my life, I think.
Okay. And what church did you join when you came to Paducah?
May I say this?
Sure.
My first church I grew up in was the Free Will Missionary Baptist. Free Will Baptist Church. It's out in the country. Mm-hmm. Then when my husband went to the Army, I joined Missionary Baptist Church in Brookwood, Illinois.
Okay. in Brook Neal?
In Brookport.
Brookport.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right. And I stayed in that church until all way after the war and everything. Mm-hmm. And then after he came home, I moved back. I went back to Brookport doing the service. Mm-hmm. I mean, doing...
While he was in the military.
In the service, yeah. But then I come back home, back over here, and I joined the Mount Zion Missionary Baptist Church in 1947. Mm-hmm. And that's where I am now.
Okay. Where did your husband serve during the military?
In France. Oh yeah, because they landed D-Day mm-hmm. in France. Mm-hmm. He was on that ship, mm-hmm. and that was the area more or less mm-hmm. that he served in the European.
Had you joined the NAACP at
yeah,
that point?
Yes.
And your husband?
Yeah, oh yeah, he was a member too. I think my first card I remember getting from the NAACP was in about 1940 or 41. Mm-hmm. And would you believe it was $1? Mm-hmm. That was the news. Mm-hmm.
When you joined the NAACP chapter here, how many people do you think belonged at that point?
Well, we we had to have 50 people to even get a,
to be recognized
by the nation. That's what I'm trying to say. And so we had, I guess, about 75 or 100 maybe.
And did that number get larger over the years or smaller?
It got smaller. Mm-hmm. And at times, when during the 60s, I'll say, mm-hmm. it grew. It began to really grow.
And so, how many would you guess were members when it had the most membership in the 60s?
About the latter part of it.
Okay. And how many people would you just roughly estimate belonged at that point?
Oh, about, I would say about 200. It wasn't.
Okay.
Everybody didn't feel the same, you know, about it.
Sure. Where were the meetings held?
Down here at 7 and Adams, they had a big building with the boys' club. Mm-hmm. And we'd have our meetings there once a month.
And did the NAACP have an office there?
No.
No.
We did all our business we did out of home.
And the president during that time was Curly Brown.
Curly Brown.
Okay. Was there a youth council?
Yes.
Can you tell me about that? What did they do?
Well, we would have little socials and to raise money. That's the point, you see. Mm-hmm. And I tell you who was the youth council advisor there for even way back then was Lorene Mathis. Mm-hmm. I believe she told me you called her.
Yes, I'm going to go see her in another day or so.
I believe she told me Wednesday. But anyway, she can tell you about that because that was really her department.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm just trying to get a sense of the chapter activity and whatnot. That's why I'm asking you that.
Well, that's what the youth would do. We'd have different little programs, little dances, different things mm-hmm. like that for okay. the younger people.
Now, I know that you became an officer. Mm-hmm.
At first, under Curly Brown, Mrs. Osceola Dawson was our secretary, and she was there when I come into it, see.
And what was her first name again?
Osceola.
How do you think?
O-S-A.
Osceola.
O-S-A-L-A.
Okay.
Dawson. D-A-W-S-O-N.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And she stayed there till she passed. And that was something like 8 or 10 years. And right after she passed away, I was elected as their secretary. Mm-hmm. Secretary Treasurer, that's what it was called. Mm-hmm. And I stayed that. And that was about, that was in the 50s, mm-hmm. early 50s, something like that. I mean, latter part of the 50s.
And how long did you hold that office?
Oh, about close to 20 years.
20 years, okay.
I guess.
Okay. And can you tell me what your duties were for that position?
I was just their secretary. Mm-hmm. They, at our meetings, I'd be at the meetings, you know, mm-hmm. and take the minutes mm-hmm. of whatever was happening, whatever we were doing, whatever our business was consist of. Mm-hmm. I did that and took all the memberships mm-hmm. and I was the one that sent them to the office,
in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And are any of those old records still available?
Mm-hmm. No. The other day I was looking at something, and I looked in a book, I seen some names that I had wrote down and sent in one time. Mm-hmm. But no, when I gave it up, I turned everything over to them, see. Mm-hmm. All the back with the old records and everything. I just carried everything to them.
So you don't
know
whether
I don't know, no.
somewhere in an attic or something
yeah.
there might be?
It might be.
Okay. Okay.
You might talk to J.W., he might know something.
Okay.
But it's been several presidents in between Curly and him, though. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I've read that James Crumlin, an attorney from Louisville,
yes.
who handled a number of lawsuits for the NAACP,
yes.
he said once, and I'm quoting him, that he thought Paducah was one of the most active NAACP chapters in Kentucky. Would you?
Yes, I would agree with him, because we have, this chapter has tried to help others, you know, establish other chapters, because I remember us going to Mayfield, going to Murray, and over Carroll one time, we were in, you know, trying to help them get it started. Chapters started. I'll agree that this was the most active one.
And when you went to help start another chapter, how did you do that?
Well, it would be somebody in that, let's say Mayfield, and they want to get a chapter started,
uh-huh.
where they call the president, our president, mm-hmm. and as many members as we could go, you know, and most especially the officers.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would explain to them what it's all about.
Did Did any of those places ever get 50 people?
Oh, yeah. Mayfield did have one.
Mayfield had a chapel?
It probably still has.
Okay.
And I don't know about Cairo no more.
Now, Cairo is up in
Illinois, though. Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's C-A-I-R-O?
C-A-I-R-O, yeah, okay. Cairo. Mm-hmm. And
Murray?
We went to Murray.
Did Murray get a chapter
yes,
going?
Yes, it did. Okay. It did. But I haven't heard anything about it, but okay. I guess it's still in function, I reckon. I really don't know.
I've read that there was a group here that was active in trying to integrate the theaters and maybe some other things called the Nonpartisan League. Did you ever hear of that?
Yes.
Can you? I don't know anything more about it.
Well, but they didn't do it. It was, they did help. I mean, any kind of help in that form was appreciated, you know. Mm-hmm. But the NAACP was in on it, on that too, mm-hmm. the theaters. Because mm-hmm. Gladman Umble,
I met him.
You met him. Mm-hmm. He was the chairperson for that theater. He, Miss Dawson, I was telling you about, and some other person, I don't remember who that was, and the president. They are the ones that really took care of that. And eventually, we worked it out. Mm-hmm. They worked it out. And then you could go to any of them and anywhere. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. But at first, no, it was one little hole. If you've seen a movie, and I remember so well, I wanted to see Gone with the Wind. I went. Mm-hmm. But you had a certain little place you went to mm-hmm. see.
What did you think of Gone with the Wind?
It was some picture. Oh, I've seen it so many times since. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a good movie. Mm-hmm. But it kind of gets you about the way people do you done. Because, mm-hmm. as I started to say a few minutes ago, our grandmother would tell us some things, you know, that would happen when they was growing up. Now they supposedly to have freed them before she got grown, but the way they was, you still used them, you wouldn't have known they were. Mm-hmm. And she has told us quite a few things about things, just unnecessary things were right. done to be, to you. You shouldn't. Shouldn't have been.
Let me go back to the local NAACP. Did you ever have any speakers come here from outside?
Yes.
People that you can remember? What kind of programs?
We had a banquet every year. Mm-hmm. And I can't say this was the first one that I remember. Did you remember the Little Rock, Arkansas mm-hmm. incident? Mm-hmm. That lady.
Daisy Bates.
Mm-hmm. She was one of our speakers. That was the biggest, in that day, banquet we had ever had. Mm-hmm. And we used to have them at Washington Street Church. They had a basement, a nice place, you know. The night that she came, the whole church was in use. It was that many people. Mm-hmm. They really turned out for that.
Mm-hmm. What did you think of her talk?
Oh, she was beautiful. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then we had Mrs. Bella Pondy came one time. Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Belafonte.
Uh-huh, she came.
She didn't bring her husband?
No, he didn't call.
Okay.
But she was a speaker one time. Right offhand, that's all I can remember right now, but I do remember we had a man.
I wonder, did Thurgood Marshall ever come?
No, no, he didn't, but I'll tell you who did. Clarence.
Mitchell?
Mitchell.
Okay.
He did.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not so sure, but to me it seemed like Mr. Randolph came one time. Lady, that's been a long time
right.
ago
okay.
to me.
Okay. And Mr. Randolph was with the Porter Union at that point in time? Is it that Mr. Randolph who was with the sleeping car?
I believe it was.
Okay.
I believe it was.
Right. And did you use the banquets also to raise money?
Yes, that's what it was about.
Okay.
And would you believe the first banquets we began to have, you know, back in the earlier time, well, $2 was all you could get out of one. You know what I mean? We sell our tickets for about $2.
Mm-hmm. You had to pay for your food.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, we donated that.
Uh-huh.
We had a donation. This Lorraine Mathis, I was just telling you about, her husband, I remember he was on that committee, and he would contact all these grocers and places. They helped us. They really was nice about that.
So they gave the food, but then did you have to cook the food?
We cooked it.
Right.
The most of the women of the branch
right.
would cook it, because I was working at the hospital at the time. And I have stayed up all night long cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Some the you know leading up to it,
mm-hmm.
and then get my shower and get ready and go on to work.
Mm-hmm.
We have done that, you know, 3 or 4 of us would go to each house,
mm-hmm.
and that's what we done.
So you'd cook together with the 3 or 4 of you,
yes.
and that kind of made it go faster.
It did, and we enjoyed it too.
Yeah.
Really
yeah.
enjoyed it.
Right. Well, you were working for a good cause.
And that's what we felt like.
Right.
That's exactly what we felt like.
And the money that you raised, tell me, went to New York.
Yeah.
And how was it used? How did you, what did you know about how they would use the money that you raised here?
Well, like, you remember when Edgar Megan, am I saying that right, got killed?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. They had to have lawyers and things.
Right.
Well, everybody contributed,
okay.
you see.
Mm-hmm.
And those banquets and things of that nature was for this, see.
So we pay for litigation and
mm-hmm.
lawyers and
mm-hmm.
whatnot. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We've had bingo games, just anything,
mm-hmm.
you know,
right.
that was legal to do.
Right.
And to raise our little money.
Right.
And
did you ever go to any national NAACP meetings?
Yes.
Any state or national?
I went to state one.
Where was that?
I think we was in Elizabethtown, I'm on the thing.
Okay.
And I went to national the year that Martin Luther King came out with his you know his doing that time
mm-hmm. When he became involved in Alabama with the bus?
Yeah, that's right, that's right.
The boycott of the bus.
The reason I remember that, that's the one he was at, and it was in Detroit. And then I went to one in Louisville.
That was a national meeting that was held in Louisville?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And, let's see, have, that's, I believe that's the only national I've ever got to be.
When do you think approximately was that meeting in Louisville?
It was in the 80s.
In the 80s, okay. I understand that Curly Brown and maybe some others from here went to Selma in Alabama for the march. Did you go, or
no.
Do you remember that at all? That
I remember the march, but I couldn't say who went.
Do you remember that there was a group who went from here?
Not to that. I can't remember that.
Okay.
I tell you what they did, a group went from here to Washington on that march.
To the, in 1963? Right. Okay. Did any of them talk about that when they came back?
Oh yeah, they talked about it. they talked about it, and I remember, and you know it was all on television and everything. I was trying to work, trying to watch, because I really wanted to hear Martin Luther King, and I did. And I got a old 78 record here. Of his, of that speech.
I Have a Dream.
Yeah.
When you were working at the hospital, and
I was working at the hospital. Trying to work and trying to listen.
Right. Okay. Yeah. But there was a group who went from here.
Yeah.
Did they?
To that, I remember. But Selma, I can't.
Okay. Did they go, how did they go to Washington? Did they rent a bus or drive in cars or?
I better not say, but it, in my mind right now, it seemed like everybody met somewhere. I don't know whether it was Frankfurt or where. Mm-hmm. And it was a bus.
Okay. And there were NAACP members in different places. Okay. Well, speaking of Frankfurt, now in 1964, there was a rally in Frankfurt at the Capitol.
Yeah.
And it was to support a bill that was in the legislature then to open up public accommodations, restaurants, and whatnot, theaters, and I wonder if a group from Paducah went to that.
I remember that, because I, in the latter years, a preacher that was our pastor. Now this is since then now. Because I remember him said he went because he said he had to climb up a tree to see the, you know, it was so many people, and he said down on the ground he got up in the tree where he went, where they had the speaking,
right.
The speaker.
Martin Luther King was there.
Yeah, he was there. I remember that.
Okay. About running out of questions here. Let me stop a minute. So you stepped down as secretary treasurer in the NAACP.
When I stepped down as the secretary, But they elected me then just as their treasurer. Oh. And I have given up the treasurer since J.W. been here.
Okay. And J.W. is the president now.
Now.
That's J.W. Mm-hmm. Cleary.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I haven't, it's been about, I would say about 4 years back.
Okay. How, what is the NAACP chapter involved in today?
Well, they, I really don't know, because I don't attend it as I did back in them days, of course, because I don't drive very well at night no more. And so, I really don't know by me not attending.
Did they do a banquet?
Oh yeah, we
still
have
the
banquet.
Every year. Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing I can remember as telling you about Miss Daisy Bates was the biggest one we had at that mm-hmm. time. But now we use this executive inn and they are full.
Mm-hmm. They're full.
So, yeah.
So they get a good turnout.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And probably nobody cooks for it anymore, mm-hmm. do they?
No, that's what we do.
Right.
But honey, we have really cooked just the ladies, you know. Mm-hmm. And you have something like 8 and 10 turkeys to fix, you know, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff.
Wow. Let me ask you something about the roles of women in the local NAACP. Let me tell you this: in some of the chapters. In other parts like Lexington, there have been women who have been presidents of the chapter.
Uh-huh.
Danville is another one. And yet, everyone that I've heard about here in Paducah has been a man president.
Now, we have one.
You did have one? Okay. Uh-huh. Tell me about her.
But she passed away a few years ago. But she didn't stay but 1 year.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember her name?
Oh, I'll think of it in a minute.
Okay. Why did she only serve for a year?
Let's cut that off a minute.
Her name
was Marie Brody.
Brody.
B-R-O-A-D-Y.
Okay.
Brody. And she. I believe it was just about a year or a year and a half. But at first she was second president.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember under who this was. Was it Gladman? He's been a president.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, right after that, she was elected for a year, and I don't know why she really left.
Mm-hmm.
I think something didn't please them or something.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So she stayed in Paducah, but she
just
gave up her
office. Oh yeah, she
just
passed away about 3 years ago now.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say about the kind of news coverage that the Paducah Sun gave to the whole struggle for civil rights here? Did they report it at all?
I think they done fairly well with it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We'd always get a banquet, and, or if we was having any other little social or a little dance or whatever. Mm-hmm. They always take, you know, we do this for us. And our meetings and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
They covered us pretty good, and they really do a good job now.
Okay. Were there ever any demonstrations or sit-ins or boycotts, mm-hmm. like Nothing New for Easter boycott
mm-hmm.
here in Paducah?
No, we didn't. But we have had little problems from time to time. Because one time, we, every officer in our branch got a little something in the mail. Because I can remember coming home and seeing this little package. What is this? And that somebody sent every one of us a dead mouse through the mail. Hmm. Now that was quite upsetting.
Yes.
And actually never did find out exactly who it was. That was one of the little things that really wasn't very pleasant. And at the hospital one time, before they really integrated it, one of the lady that was over the dining area, she began to want to separate us, you know, put us. Went in there one day and she done put little signs on every table where she wanted y'all was to sit, and this other where they was to sit. Well, now that hadn't been, see. And I wondered what happened. I just went and called my president and told him what was happening, and he just told me to go on back to work and, you know, not bother. But in the meantime, he, as Curly, Miss Dawson, and Joseph Freeland, he was our lawyer here in Paducah. Well, they came down and talked to the hospital staff, you know. And just burst just like that.
It sounds like you were able here to really negotiate the issues rather than have to use like
sit-ins and all right. that things of right. that nature. That's right.
Okay. I want to ask you about Joe Freeland, the lawyer. He was a white man.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And what can you tell me about him? Why did he become active with you all?
I'll tell you exactly what he told us at a meeting one night. He says he just felt like he wanted to help somebody that needed help, you know. Mm-hmm. That his father was so hard about against black people. Just didn't like them. And he could never understand why, because to him, they were just people like everybody else, you know. But anyway, when he got his lawyer degree and all this, he said that gave him an incentive to do something to help in where the black people were concerned, see. Now, he told us that one night at one of the meetings, because he would come to the meetings. I think he's a life member mm-hmm. now.
Mm-hmm. He's still living?
Yes, he's mm-hmm. pretty feeble. But
I can't find him in the phone book. So I can't find his name and telephone number in the Paducah phone book.
It's not?
No. That's why I mm-hmm. wasn't sure whether he was still living. But
well, if he has, I hadn't.
And you would have seen that in the newspaper.
Yeah. When you talk to Gladman, ask him about it.
Okay.
He would okay. come near knowing most of it.
Right. Okay. Well, is there anything else I haven't asked you about that you think you should tell me? Well, you've been a great interview, Ms. Taylor.
Oh, well, thank you.
You've given me a lot of...
I'm not as scared as I was.